My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Dave Delaney hosts a great podcast called The Nice Podcast. Dave, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Thanks for asking. The Nice Podcast is all about helping leaders improve the way they communicate with their team members, with their prospects, with their colleagues, everybody. So that's what it's all about.
Amazing. Where can people subscribe?
The places that you subscribe to podcasts normally. But you can also find the show at marketingpodcast.net, of course. And you can also visit nicepodcast.co.
You heard him, folks. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Apollo Ono.
So your speedometer, that is you, you are the governor of how fast charging you want to be, or if you want to let off that gas and coast, or maybe you want to stop. So you have to realize that in the modes of change, there's always going to be this transition point where it feels very difficult and challenging. Instead, you need to embrace the change, embrace the challenges, embrace the unknown, and go against the grain sometimes.
Reinvention is at the core of Apollo Anton Ono. He acquired and honed this skill over a decade of Olympic speed skating competition, during which he became the most decorated U.S. Winter Olympian of all time. Apollo continually adapts that performance mindset to support ongoing personal and professional growth. He has drawn on this acumen to become a global cross-industry entrepreneur, a successful sports broadcaster and television personality, a New York Times best-selling author, and a lifelong scholar inside and outside of the university setting. Apollo harnesses these experiences to educate and inspire organizations on how to foster a sustained leadership mindset needed to overcome current business challenges. My interview with Apollo Ono is coming right up, but first, I want to share something our friends at Storyblok have to make you even smarter. It's a new report called The State of Content Management, and it's a very useful survey of 515 businesses in the U.S. and Europe, companies just like yours, and how they're approaching content distribution through their digital channels in 2022. Think about it. You have to provide content for your website, maybe a mobile app. And then there's e-commerce platforms, voice-activated speakers. Managing content is more complex today than ever. Get insights and ideas on how companies like yours are tackling the content challenge with the State of Content Management report from Storyblok. Just go to storyblok.com/onbrand for your free report. That's Storyblok, without the C, .com/onbrand. Apollo Ono, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Thanks for having me.
I was excited to both have this conversation, but even more so when I was reading your new book, Hard Pivot, and there on page 40, I was honored that I made the book because on your daily list of accomplishments, it notes lined up podcast or lined up to talk hard pivot on podcast interviews. So I was very thrilled that in a very small way, this conversation is a part of your work.
It absolutely is. I mean, I think that's the beauty of having access to wide and vast audiences is our ability to disseminate information, but also communicate in a way that we feel the best vessel could be. Versus in the past, right? In the kind of old school era, you'd have to show up at a author's book signing event in a particular time at a specific place that was challenging to get to. And now I think you kind of, you know, learn as you go or listen as you go is something that I'm very happy about, because, you know, with everyone's life being so busy and I think just overloaded with distraction, using these as a means of really kind of scaling the messaging is really powerful.
Well, you open the book with what I think is an interesting concept, because it occurred to me this wasn't a part of your recent life that I knew very much about. I've certainly seen you other places on TV, in the news since then, but you talk about what you call the great divorce. And you talk about kind of the ending of your career and kind of just quietly stopping. Talk a bit about that, because that wasn't a story that I'd heard before.
Yeah, I think that probably most Olympic athletes can relate to this, and I think many people in general. The process of transition from one identity to the next, my identity up until that point, until 2010, for 15 years, was the embodiment of the Olympic path. It was the support and nurturing that the love for sport and the Olympics had given me. And it was my first true love. And even though my decision to retire was by choice, there was something that was vastly different than other avenues. And what I mean by that is I thought that I was making the choice and I thought that I was in control. But in reality, sport was almost telling me it's time to go. And there's nothing that you can do to come back to me as such with like a normal relationship. It's like really painful to deal with when that thing that has always given you the guardrails and support and affirmation that you are enough, that you are good enough, and that the world has celebrated you because you were able to perform at the highest of levels. That was something that I had to become very familiar with, that saying like, I will never be on the ice ever again in a competitive manner. And I'm never going to stand on top of a podium in the Olympics. By the way, what else are you good at? What else have you been interested in and curious about? What other skill sets have you developed over time? Is there anything else that is sparking purpose in a way that makes you feel just as obsessed and loves your career path as you did in the Olympic path? And what I realized very quickly was that I didn't do anything else except the Olympics. I didn't know my identity. I did not know my identity outside of, you know, what previously people had thought about, because I had been staring from the top down at the largest facet of my personality and my being. And I wasn't focused on the attributes. I was only focused on what was on that business card. And that was the inception and the idea really behind the book, was that I think many of us will go through some semblance of a divorce, whether it's, you know, hopefully not in real life with your partner, but in other areas where you're forced to make these hard pivots and changes. And it's hard because human behavior is hard to change. That pattern and recognition and routine that we become so accustomed to and familiar with is something that is deeply ingrained in us from a safety perspective, right? We typically don't like uncertainty, volatile environments, or unknown environments, because it signals to our brain that this is something new and fresh, and it's also potentially dangerous. And there's the other side of your brain that says this is new and fresh and exciting, and I can grow and I want to explore. And that's the part that's the childlike. And I talk about that later on in the book, around this idea that we often get trained out of having that childlike quality of exploration and relentless curiosity. And mainly because we've been scarred, we've had emotional pains, we've had traumas in our life that have really mitigated our ability to be in that free-floating state without really understanding what the consequence would be from an emotional construct. And so in 2010, when I did retire, my great divorce was like 4 years long, where I was constantly going back in between the two, you know, the strongest prison in the world, which was between my 2 ears, and trying to break free in a way that says like, who are you living for? What are you living for? What are you pursuing? What is actually important to you fundamentally? And can you pursue something that will give you that semblance of fulfillment because you feel like you're purpose-driven? And that was a deep conversation to have. And while I wore the poker face throughout my entire career, even after I retired, internally, there was a lot of conflict and confusion. And I know that other people have faced the same way, where they have these feelings and thoughts of being less than, having insecurities, feeling like imposter syndrome is taking over their life, or just simply just not believing that they can do anything else except for what they did previously in the prior 10, 15, 20 years. And my answer is, you can. Your perception of reality, the challenges, the opportunities that will come your way are up to you to decide on how you choose to make them essential parts of your path.
Well, and you talk about even, I mean, the level of detail was something that really drew me in, because as you said, you know, in looking at what else there is, you talked about even the way your day was structured, what you would wake up and do, what you ate, all of these different things. So where do you start with what's a really blank page? And without, I mean, I love the parallels to being a child that you get to later, but the as very serious grownups, we don't have a lot of tools for curiosity, for finding that purpose.
I think it starts first and foremost with kind of a call it a self, you know, taking a self inventory, right? Like the self acceptance that I didn't grow up with, by the way, in any semblance of the form, is an ability to transparently look in the mirror and see you for who you are today. And it's an uncomfortable sight, right? Many of us, including me, are very dissatisfied or have been dissatisfied with who they saw in the mirror. Oh, you're not where you need to be. Oh, the world expects you to be here. Oh, whatever they may be. You can't change those things in that real time. You can only make the decisions moving forward to start to improve upon them. But it first starts with that acceptance of oneself. And I think that's a really overlooked part, where you can fully accept yourself in all of these qualities, all of these inconsistencies and self-doubts and fears of failures. And then you can make a decision to say, okay, now how do I move on beyond that? Finding your purpose is merely a means of identifying with what you deem to be the most important in your life. What are the things that you feel are naturally gifted to you? What are things that you love to do? What do you feel that you don't like? And how can you kind of create this ikigai-like, you know, Venn diagram, to where you're in the middle of something that gives you happiness, you're really good at it, makes you feel purpose-driven, you're getting paid for it in some way. I think those are really, really important, right? So finding your purpose is something that I think many of us have had challenges. And it's important to have that conversation of, what do I believe the universe or this world or God wants for me? And what do I want from this world, universe, God? Ooh, what do I want for this life? And are they in alignment? I always say that, you know, gratitude is kind of the root and the fundamental principle there, because then it transfers into giving, which I think helps us really understand what's actually motivating us, versus like this fear of other people's opinions or, you know, going along and living for someone else in our life. So I think, you know, finding our ikigai, so to speak, is something that's really, really unique. You know, it's a way that we can diagram, I think, to figure out kind of like, what are the three key elements of your life purpose? Like, what are you good at? What do you love? And what do you think the world needs in some capacity? And that's hard, right? Because many people are in positions and career paths that perhaps they have no real interest in, and they're able to squeak by because they're grinding. And that's also okay. That's a part of the current chapter that you are on. But again, you're always able to make a decision and a choice of how you want the next chapter to begin.
Say more about the concept of ikigai, because I had not been familiar with that prior to reading this, and I think it is a really, really useful concept in answering some of these challenging questions.
Yeah, this is not my, you know, thesis. This is things that I have been able to extrapolate over the years of reading and philosophers. You know, basically what it is you want to, on a piece of paper, diagram out, meaning you want to create these, you know, four circles, to just, you know, you can do three as well, but really depending on kind of how you view yourself in your current career path. And so you want to ask yourself questions around like, what are you good at? What do you love to do? Like, what's important to you and what do you feel aligned there? And then what do you think that the world needs or your family needs you to do, right? You can put those things and they overlap, right? So these four circles in the middle is this kind of sweet spot, I think, that really allows you to kind of align in a significantly better way in the same way. And I found my kind of ikigai and my life purpose through others, through my ability to communicate and articulate very similar feelings and emotions that many others have had, even though they've never stepped foot on the ice or the Olympic podium. We are still human beings and we still have these internal conversations. And so I knew that I wasn't alone and I want them to know that they are also not alone. And so a part of this process is really dealing, I think, with not only who you are right now, but also identifying and affirming those strengths that you have. Those abilities will truly, truly peek through and shine through when you're not so focused on all of your weaknesses. And so that phenomena is basically designed by living, right? Like you want to design your life by focusing on your strengths. And yes, you can always improve upon those, you know, those weaknesses. But I think overall, it's being mindful of where your mind is going because your energy will flow to follow.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Dave Delaney hosts a great podcast called The Nice Podcast. Dave, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Thanks for asking. The Nice Podcast is all about helping leaders improve the way they communicate with their team members, with their prospects, with their colleagues, everybody. So that's what it's all about.
Amazing. Where can people subscribe?
The places that you subscribe to podcasts normally. But you can also find the show at marketingpodcast.net, of course. And you can also visit nicepodcast.co.
You heard him, folks. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So you unpack some big insights like Ikigai, like Viktor Frankl, but there are also quotes from the likes of Pitbull and was delighted to see Diamond Dallas Page make an appearance with Don't Just Think It, Ink It. But it's a relevant point because what I really love is that you have so many. There are a lot of big questions that aren't easy to answer, but the book is full of activities that doesn't just kind of pose this big question. It really helps you work through it. You alluded to this a bit before, but I love the exercise about listing your roles out, because I think that we have our first answers that are the business card things. But as I was sitting there looking at that, I realized, you know, I do the cooking here at our house, and I think to me that's one of my most important jobs. It's not what's on my business card, but that is a big part of who I am. So these exercises that we can go through, I think help us get a lot closer to some of those big answers.
I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, look, I think ultimately, you know, there's career paths that people talk about around, you know, if you're having fun, you'll never work a day in your life. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, for some people, they've been gifted that, and that's incredible. But I know for sure that doesn't work for me. I'm doing a lot of things that I don't want to do that are really hard, and I'd rather be doing something else. And that's okay. That's a part of the process. Like, we need to constantly, as one of the quotes in my book, be thrown out of the nest continuously to feel alive and fully live, right? And that means, like, we must push outside of the comfort zone. We have to go into the area and the arena where there is unfamiliar territory. There is an uncertainty in the air. And that's what helps us grow and adapt and transform into the person that we know that we could become. You know, one of my favorite quotes of all time, and you know, I talk about this often in many, many other podcasts, is this quote by Douglas Mallock. And I'm not sure if you are familiar with this poem that he had written. And I'd love to share it with you, and hopefully, you know, it also resonates. And it's called "Good Timber." And I'd love to just read this to you, because I think many people will probably like this, and some of, you know, your listeners have probably listened to this before, but. "The tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, but stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. The man who ever never had to toil to gain and farm his patch of soil, who never had to win his share of sun and light and sky and air, never became a manly man, but lived and died as he began. Good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees. The further sky, the greater length. The more the storm, the more the strength. By sun and cold, by rain and snow, in trees and men, good timbers grow. Where thickest lies in the forest growth, we find the patriarchs of both. And they hold counsel with the stars, whose broken branches show the scars of many winds and much of strife. This is the common law of life." And I read that probably, Nick, I probably read that like 3 times a week, because I'm constantly reminded by the human experience to do hard things, to adapt to uncomfortable situations, and to perceive this life as a gift as it's been given. But we have to be able to persevere and continue. So hopefully that's helpful to people.
I love the message in the heart of that too, about the striving, the work. You know, you spend, and obviously given your career of striving towards achievement and excellence, but in life, we can end up in this kind of binary of winning and losing. And you spend a lot of time talking about the learning, and it makes me think of the striving in that poem, and that there's something that comes out of that, and that just looking at that as losing feels like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, look, missed opportunity is real, and that's okay. I think maybe like a deeper question that maybe we should be asking is, you know, in life, oftentimes we're all dealt a different set of cards, some strengths, some weaknesses, some circumstances, some toughness, some things that are sometimes don't feel fair or are not fair. I think a method for really accomplishing what we would all deserving to be and living is a great lived life is kind of these 5 golden principles for adapting and thriving in the face of chaos or uncertainty and doubt and pressure. And that is, you know, starting your day with gratitude, having giving as a component of how you live your life, understanding the journey is never easy. And so grit is a big part of that, setting your expectations or gearing up. And that really means just setting new routines, shaking up your methodology for how you operate. And the last one's going and getting into action. And so for many of us who seek changes or feel like we've lost an opportunity and it's never going to be back, that may be true. that may be true that you'll never have that opportunity again to invest in Google at, you know, 10 bucks or in Apple at a dollar or in Amazon at, you know, $10, like whatever that might be, those are gone. And that's okay. Like your life is short and there's 86,400 seconds per day. And you can spend a lot of those seconds per day and minutes and hours dwelling on something that is outside of your control, that perhaps something that has happened in the past that has felt like made you wronged or angry or sad or whatever it might be. Or you can start living for the present moment and saying that life is this gift and I'm going to begin living it. So that psychology is not something that comes naturally to many of us because we live in a world where everything is taken for granted. I don't want my Amazon delivery on tomorrow. I want it in an hour. Right. And so like these things are, you know, and there's great things about this as well, but I'm just saying, like, you know, in a world where everything's at our fingertips, we also expect change from ourselves, but the human DNA is incredibly adaptable, but it takes time. It takes consistency. And the work happens to be the shortcut this time around.
I have to zoom out and just note that the speed skater knows how many seconds there are in the day. I feel like there's a joke to be made there, but I'm not smart enough to get there. So as we talk about individual purpose, is there how do you apply this? Can you zoom out and apply this to organizational purpose?
I think so. Look, I think at the most humanistic level, regardless of the type of performance that you are demanding from your team, yourself, from your organization, career path, fitness, whatever it might be, organizational structure is all about setting these parameters in which you want to operate. For example, if you are someone that is desiring to change the way their physical fitness is or how they treat exercise, well, a part of that is that you need to not give that secondary voice in your head, the one that says, well, I'll do it tomorrow. Oh, well, what are you going to wear? Oh, what kind of shoes are you going to use? Oh, are you going to do weights or cardio? Like, you need to be writing these things beforehand. So structural organization comes in the fact of these are the things that I will do, and I will check them off one by one. Because you can talk yourself out of many circumstances. I do this, right? And when I create these lists, so to speak, when I create these reminders of why I'm doing what I'm doing, much like many people who started their January 1st New Year's resolutions have already fallen off, way off the mark, probably in February. So the only way to keep yourself accountable is two ways. One, you have your personal board of directors, which you can surround yourself with. That could be one person, five people. I think somewhere around 3 to 5 is a sweet spot that give you insights, that care about your outcome and have your best interests in mind, that keep you accountable at the same time. They give it to you hard and true and radically transparent. And on the other side is you are your own governor of your own speed limit. Really important, right? So your speedometer, that is you, you are the governor of how fast charging you want to be, or if you want to let off that gas and coast, or maybe you want to stop. So you have to realize that in the modes of change, there's always going to be this transition point where it feels very difficult and challenging. And that one voice in your head is going to tell you, come back over here where it ain't broke. So why would you try to fix it? Come back over here where it's safe and routine, even though you know it's not good for you. It just gives you some sense of familiarity, which gives and senses that it's safe. Instead, you need to embrace the change, embrace the challenges, embrace the unknown, and go against the grain sometimes and not give that voice a vote. Instead, you're articulating something that says, this is the mission that I'm driven by. These are the purposes that I want to kind of align myself with. And my true north believes so. So I'm going to be pulled rather than pushed.
I love the idea of being the governor of your own speed limit. That is a great note as we start to wrap things up. This being the On Brand podcast, it is my turn to ask you, Apollo, for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Oh, there's a lot of brands that have made me smile. You know, to be completely open with you, the publisher for my book is called Sounds True, and they have a partnership with Macmillan as the distributor. And Sounds True is this unique publisher. They're not like super large, but they're really focused on uplifting the world, higher states of consciousness, helping us identify with what is the most important thing in our life and how do we live in a more holistic way. And so as I go through my own healing and transformation and personal development process, it was just, it made me smile to know that there are many people who are dedicated to helping all of us live more fruitfully, healthier, more fulfilled so that we can show up fully.
That is awesome. Apollo, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Apollo Ono, on Instagram at Apollo Ono, and then of course on my website, apolloono.com. That's just one L, A-P-O-L-O.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Apollo, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Dave Delaney hosts a great podcast called The Nice Podcast. Dave, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Thanks for asking. The Nice Podcast is all about helping leaders improve the way they communicate with their team members, with their prospects, with their colleagues, everybody. So that's what it's all about.
Amazing. Where can people subscribe?
The places that you subscribe to podcasts normally. But you can also find the show at marketingpodcast.net, of course. And you can also visit nicepodcast.co.
You heard him, folks. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.